and welcome to Parental Guidance Suggested. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
And we have two of the biggest movies of the weekend.
I think they are the two largest movies of the weekend.
The last numbers I saw, Venom made $80 million plus.
And that's just domestically. I believe the worldwide opening put it at $200 million, which means it doubled its budget in its opening weekend.
And A
which
Star
also
is
means
Born.
Venom 2.
Yes, of course. And A Star is Born made, when I was looking earlier today, $42 million plus.
That's right where I saw it, yeah.
So it's a hit as well. So we have a lot to
cover. A
Star
is Born did not cost an arm and a leg.
No,
I will guarantee you. I don't know the precise numbers on it, but like that was not any $260 million blowout there.
So we're going to start first with Venom. Venom, the number one movie, and Venom is... You tell the story of Venom, because I don't know a lot about Venom, except that I want to see it.
Well, this is a very loose adaptation of Venom. The character, if you know the character from comic books, he is a Spider-Man villain. Now, during the 90s, because of Venom's popularity, Marvel tried to make him more of like an anti-hero, kind of similar to the Punisher. It was a very short-lived series. This feels like it's pulling from there. They never mentioned specifically. It was called a Lethal Protector, I think was the name of the series.
Because I got the impression from the trailer that he was kind of a good guy.
Well, the catch about using Venom when you don't have Spider-Man in your movie is like you either have this character that's just going around wreaking havoc on people, robbing them and not really having anything redeeming about them, or you kind of, like you said, you have to make them kind of an anti-hero. Venom's not above biting someone's head off or, like, tearing off their limbs, but Eddie Brock in this particular iteration of the character is a reasonable, I would dare say, kind or even reputable person. Not the case in the comic books. Eddie Brock was not a good person there. Here, he is a reporter of sorts, and he's trying to find, the truth in this, that, or the other. And anytime Venom's just like, well, we'll bite their head off. And he's like, we can't do that. Like, maybe if they're terrible, awful, bad people, maybe we can do it then. But that's only maybe some of those times.
Okay, so unlike Hulk and Bannister, Banner. Why did I say Bannister? I don't know. I actually know it's Banner. Huh. That bugs me that I made that error. But anyway, unlike them where it's not an active conversation when they're one or the other, correct?
Venom and
this
Eddie Brock are constant. It's almost a... do you remember the scene, I think it was in Two Towers, where Gollum is having a conversation with himself?
Of course.
And it's switching the camera. It's very similar to that dynamic. Like... Mm-hmm. Eddie Brock is sitting there just going, oh, well, we shouldn't do that. And then you'll hear Venom coming in. He's like, we can do whatever we want.
So how did he become Venom?
Venom is an alien symbiote from another planet. And it stemmed out of Secret Wars in the comic books. As that did not happen in this universe, there is a exploratory space vessel that essentially crashes and loses one of its symbiotes. Mm-hmm. And eventually, this is the one that becomes the villain in it. Now, Tom Hardy has been investigating the guy that owns the company that is doing human trials with the symbionts. He thinks that they can possibly merge and use these whenever they try to go to other planets. Mm-hmm. He's assuming that, like, Earth eventually is going to become uninhabitable, and he wants to make sure that he and, like, 1,000 of his richest friends have got somewhere to go.
Right.
The symbionts would hypothetically allow him to do that. Now, one of his friends has kind of keyed him in on this place, saying they're doing terrible stuff. You need to check this out. You need to report on it. You need to get some. He gets in there, actually sees an individual he knows, tries to break them out of there. The symbiote it's almost like having compatible blood. Like, if I were to give you the wrong type of blood in a blood transfusion, your body would reject it.
I am A negative.
If you reject
I'm special.
If you reject it, the problems can be fatal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they were running into. Like, the symbionts have to find a suitable host. If they do not, it can either end poorly for the human or the symbiote. In this particular instance, fatal for the human.
Mm-hmm.
But it finds its way over to Eddie Brock and finds that it's a match.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where the two of them meet. I don't know if that's even the mm-hmm. Where he
become joined.
I guess that's the easy. Yeah.
Okay, so he's Venom because he's poisonous. I mean, I saw a lot of teeth.
That's honestly all of them. You have several different symbionts in the comic books, and with the amount of money that Venom has made, I will guarantee you that you are going to see more of them. Now, his most popular one, Carnage, does not appear in this movie. They did a very popular comic book series called Maximum Carnage, where Spider-Man and Venom actually had to team up against him. Riot is actually the one that is the villain symbiote in this particular film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give it too much away. There are also multiple after credit sequences in this, but there are allusions to what we will
multiple
see.
Multiple as in how many, and do we have to wait through the entire?
Yes, you have to wait. There's one in the middle, and then there's one at the very, very end.
Is it worth it?
The first one is. The second one really depends on how into the Spider-Verse you are.
Okay. So, due to the Insta success of this, not only do you see Venom 2, you see maybe Venom, Spider-Man, and other configurations.
I believe Sony has more or less tied live-action Spider-Man to the MCU right now.
Okay.
With the success of this, you may potentially see them revoke the rights to the Marvel Universe so that Spider-Man can appear in their universe. Like, more or less what they did, they farmed out Spider-Man to the Marvel Cinematic, like the Iron Man, Thor, so that he can interact with them. Venom does not take place in that universe. It's its own separate thing, and Sony has the rights to all of these Spider-Man. Like, Gwen Stacy can appear there, the Green Goblin can appear there, any of the spider villains. The only one they can't use right now is Spider-Man because he is on loan to Marvel. Because the last time they made a Spider-Man movie, it lost money. And Spider-Man is the most profitable superhero IP in the world.
Really?
He is more profitable than Superman, more profitable than Batman. He is more profitable than the Avengers.
And how did the movie lose money?
The movie lost money. Like, Spider-Man t-shirts, toys, action figures, and all that, that didn't lose money.
Because he can do whatever a spider can.
And apparently it sells some merch.
Yeah.
Like, that's what the spider does best. And like I said, when when I'm talking about, like, selling better, it's not like Batman, Superman, and the Avengers are, like, throwing a pittance here, like, as far as merchandise goes. They're making a ton of money. Spider-Man is ridiculously popular everywhere in the world. And I think they realize, hey, we have what should be the most profitable possible IP, and we just made a movie that lost money. We obviously do not.
Homecoming lost money.
No, Homecoming is Marvel. I'm talking Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
Not Amazing. Amazing Spider-Man 2, basically, that was. They were going to do their Spider-Verse there, but it tops out at $200 million. Ends up doing $700 million worldwide. But keep in mind, this is a character that can sell more merchandise than Superman and Batman. Your character, if he's only making $700 million, and they spent like a bushel and a peck on that movie. Like, it's, I believe, the third or fourth most expensive superhero film ever made. They knew that they should be getting a certain return on that, and they weren't.
Mm-hmm.
So that was when the decision was made. Okay, who does know what they're doing? Marvel. These guys definitely know what they're doing. They knew that Spider-Man gets a bump, like, as far as popularity by being able to play with the Marvel characters at large. And if Marvel is doing their film, like, Marvel, whenever they did Homecoming, they didn't get, like, a ton of profit, like, off that. That was still Sony's property. Marvel is just the one that produced it, directed it, like, wrote it. They put all the talent together and then put it out there on the condition Spider-Man can appear in our movies. Like, he can show up in Civil War. He can show up in Infinity War. We want him to do that. We will make you guys a Spider-Man movie. Spider-Man's still your IP. It's similar to the deal that they have with Universal. Universal still owns Hulk, which is the reason why you don't see Hulk in his own independent film. However, the deal is different when Hulk appears in, like, the Avengers, if he appears in Thor Ragnarok. Like, it's a different bit of the participation, like, share points, like, mm-hmm. and the end outcome and the money that they make. So Hulk and Spider-Man are allowed to play in the Marvel Universe, and Universal and Sony still maintain their ownership of those characters. Because at this point, Marvel has made them worth millions of dollars, and nobody in their right mind is going to let them buy that property from them. To get the X-Men back, Disney had to just go in and buy 20th Century Fox. Like, that's the only reason.
Interesting.
That's the only reason the X-Men are going to be back at Marvel.
And I read that there's going to be a Black Widow prequel standalone.
Finally. Like, I don't know why that character, like, I'm not disrespecting Paul Rudd or Ant-Man, but how did it not occur to them that a movie about, like, a Russian double agent, like,
it's,
spy?
It's because it's Paul Rudd, and he's, like, everybody's best friend. It's like, we got to give him the movie.
But I'm just saying, like, how would a Marvel movie about, like, a Russian assassin, like, how are they like, nah, people won't watch that. Why would they? No. She was in that Avengers movie? Did people like that? Oh, what, they did? $1.5 billion, huh? I get it. Did they like her in that movie? Like, what was that about?
I mean, she has different hair in each one of them. That's kind of a thing.
Like, I really never understood how Marvel, of all the properties that you have, like, sitting in front of you, a character that is a pretty integral part of Avengers, Civil War, Winter Soldier, Age of Ultron, like, all of this, they're not just like, maybe we should give her own movie. Almost literally everyone else on the team has had that. Like, Hawkeye and her. That's it.
Yep. So, I've also been reading regarding Marvel that after Avengers 4 comes out, for many of them, for the cast that we know as the Avengers, their contracts are up and they're going, yep.
A lot of them are just kind of out and saying, I'm done. Like, if any of you are on Twitter, Robert Downey Jr. gave what looks like a send-off to Chris Evans.
Mm-hmm.
It is a picture of Buzz and Woody from Toy Story dressed up to look like Iron Man and Captain America, with Chris Evans being Woody in this one. It says, we all know who the real sheriff was in town, Chris Evans. And the caption on the photo that he's posted of this drawing says, to Infinity War and beyond. Like, it's kind of touch, and Evans has more or less said, like, he's done at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, he hasn't said that his character dies in the movie, but he said Infinity War, whatever Infinity War 2 is, like, they reputedly it's Avengers Annihilation, whatever that movie is, he's done.
And what I'm also reading is they now want to present our current Avengers, much like Sherlock Holmes, much like James Bond, same character, different people. It is accepted to do that.
I honestly, I think Marvel has such a deep, deep roster of characters. You don't need to be doubling up, like, on them. Now, I understand, like, there you've had multiple actors play James Bond. You've had several different actors play Batman. I'm not saying you can never recast them, but if you want to continue the expanded universe in the way that they have for the last 10 years, when I say Batman, different people have different actors that appear under your head. Maybe you're Adam West. Maybe yours is Michael Keaton. Maybe yours is Christian Bale. When I say Iron Man,
it's RDJ.
There is only one name.
Yeah,
I think you are going to fight an uphill battle. I think similar to what happened with the Solo movie, mm-hmm. when you didn't have Harrison Ford playing Han Solo.
By the
way,
Solo is a very good movie.
Well, I'm not even dogging on it.
Yes, I see that. Yeah.
But one of the caveats people had about that movie is it's not Harrison Ford, and it's not even because the movie's bad or the actor playing Han Solo. He just has to live up. Like, when I say Han Solo, there's only one name that appears in your head, isn't it? I'm saying, like, Harrison Ford is so connected with that character, like, it's almost impossible to separate the two of them. Robert Downey Jr. is so connected to Iron Man at this point. What actor wants to take... Who wants to take on that expectation where are 99.9% likely to fail? People are just going to be like, give us RDJ back. Give us, give him back. Like, what are you doing here, Marvel?
Yeah. Of course, these movies are all going to be remade 20, 30 years from now and embedded in our brain in some other watching chip way to watch these things. But I think the next few years... Those actors, they're in my mind, they're not aging out yet. You know, yes, they're older, but they're not drastically different looking.
Chris Evans is not going around with a walker like now. Like,
and Hemsworth said that
he may be.
He's up for it.
He was kind of done after Dark World.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was not enjoying those movies. He didn't feel like they just weren't fun to him. Then Ragnarok came around, and apparently he had such a blast on that, he reversed his previous statement saying, Thor 3 is it for me. After that, he's gone, maybe Thor 4. Like, I don't know.
Ragnarok, the more I watch it, the funnier it gets. And I loved it the first time.
Ragnarok is exceptional. Like, it really, I think you and I recently spoke about it on one of the podcasts, but it's, the movie, it's just funny, it's entertaining, like, it's... I don't know a whole lot about that movie that I didn't enjoy.
Yeah. I think I would have, well, maybe it would have ruined it, but even I would have liked 5 more minutes with Strange, because that whole thing was funny. Just all of it funny.
Benedict Cumberbatch, like, is honestly, like, fantastic. And in any other expanded universe, like, that would be the star.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is so good in that role. Unfortunately, he exists in the same shared universe as Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel like that guy, he is a star pitcher just waiting, like, in the dugout to get called up. Like, just look at his career. Like, look at him in Into Darkness. Look at him in The Hop. I'm just saying, like, that guy is a hot ticket. And he's playing a side character, essentially, right now. And he's a leading man.
But we all are assuming, well, I am, anyway, so thus we all are assuming it's because of Doctor Strange that it's all going to magically, they're not dead, yada, yada, yada. I'm assuming that's part of what's going to bring most of the characters back.
My assumption has to deal with the Quantum Realm and Captain Marvel.
And Ant-Man and Wasp.
Right, that's at the end of the movie when Scott Lang is trapped in the Quantum Realm. Like, you don't have the Time Stone, you don't have the Eye of Agamotto, you don't have any of that. Like, to do that, the only other way that I can think that they're going to time travel and do it in a, and when I say realistic way, I understand the oddity of what I just said, but I think the Quantum Realm is how you get there. And the fact that they highlighted it with the after credit sequence tells me that is going to play in very largely to Infinity War. Also, seeing as how the two of original Ant-Man and the Wasp both got snapped.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're happy with Venom. Is it funny? I'm guessing it's not Ragnarok funny, but is it amusing? Is it...
There is a lot about Venom that I don't think that they do correctly. Like, I think its Rotten Tomato score from the critics is a bit harsh and it's off, because it's like at a 31. Like, it's...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're trashing it. The film is not that bad. Like, it's... What was it? They were... I believe Spider-Man 3 has an aggregate score to that. Spider-Man 3 is a terrible movie. Like, I'm not going to defend that thing at all. Venom has a lot of parts of it that work, and then there's a lot of parts of it that I don't know. They feel out of when you are existing in a world that Dark Knight and Iron Man basically changed the way you did superhero movies. This film is not either of them, and like I said, I don't mean it detrimentally. I'm not telling you not to see Venom. I saw it in 3D on a Friday night. Like, I had fun with the thing.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing about the movie, and this is going to sound weird, is Tom Hardy or Eddie Brock and Venom's relationship, which is essentially just Tom Hardy talking to himself. That is the most engaging, entertaining, and funny part of the movie. Like, there's a girlfriend character. The villain isn't particularly memorable. But if they take anything to the sequel and expand it, it needs to be I don't know exactly how Venom playing against Eddie or it's Tom Hardy. Tom Hardy's an exceptional actor. Having double the Tom Hardy was a great thing for this.
Oh, lovely.
Like,
okay.
Topher Grace was not a good Eddie Brock in Spider-Man 3. Like, that may have been one of the things that just pushed me so fast and hard.
Topher Grace was in Spider-Man 3?
He was in He was Eddie Brock as Venom in Spider-Man 3. It's awful. Don't revisit it.
I don't even know if I've seen
it. Don't. Pretend there are only two Spider-Man movies. At least from the Sam Raimi era of that. It's the depiction is wrong. Like, the special effects look stupid. I don't know anything that's right about that movie.
Okay.
As a comic book fan watching it, I'm just sitting there going, nope.
Which is the one with Sandman?
That's also the one. Okay, fine. That is the positive point of Spider-Man 3.
Oh, okay. So it's
Spider-Man
3.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, that's the guy who's the mechanic on wings, and now he's sand.
Well, you're not wrong. But yeah, like I said, Venom is actually it is not an MCU Marvel movie. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's quite on that caliber, but if you enjoy the character and you don't have sky high, like, don't go in expecting Infinity War or the original Iron Man, like those or the Dark Knight. Don't go in expecting a game changer.
And is it darker like the ones on Netflix? Does it fall in between?
It's not even that mature. Like, Venom does some pretty hostile things, but they're not R-rated. Like, when he bites somebody's head off, like, you don't see like the spine and the torso and blood going everywhere. You see Venom, like, bite their head off, but he eats them whole and then swallows them.
Oh!
Like, he does terrible things, but you're not necessarily privy to seeing them before your eyes.
It's like when the T-Rex ate the lawyer in Jurassic Park.
It's just like that kind of violence. Like, if you can deal with the Jurassic Park level of violence, you can deal with the violence in this movie.
Okay.
And like I said, Venom isn't necessarily a good role model, but Eddie Brock tries to keep him in check, I guess, maybe, sort of.
Does Venom as Venom get to write the news stories? Because that could be entertaining.
If he does, then he is controlling Eddie without his knowing.
Okay.
But like I said, there will be, with the amount of money it's made, there will be a sequel. There are positive aspects of this movie that need to show up in the sequel, but at its heart, it is a flawed film, but it's not Catwoman bad.
Oh.
Like, there was a lot, like, headlines were just like, oh, it's the worst superhero movie since No, it's not. It's really not. Like, it's not as good as, like I said, an Iron Man or a Thor Ragnarok.
But it's better than Spider-Man 3 and Catwoman.
This is not Sony's worst effort in the Spider-Verse. Like,
okay.
I liked Amazing Spider-Man. I didn't like Spider-Man 3. Amazing Spider-Man 2, I think, got bogged down trying to create a universe nobody had asked them to create. This film seems to wink at the possibility that there may be more adventures in this, but it's not so bogged down with it that the film loses something because of it.
So definitely matinee price worth it.
I think so. And I saw
it was fun.
I saw the 3D version of it. Like, it actually looked, it's not Avatar quality or Gravity quality on as far as 3D.
Man, Gravity made me so anxious.
Was that not an exceptional? There's only a couple times I've said, yes, that was the proper way to do a 3D film.
Oh, I didn't see it in 3D. I haven't seen 3D on purpose in years.
Oh, I saw that one.
That makes me sick just thinking about it.
Oh, man, that and 7.1 surround sound.
I'm
telling you, like, Gravity, I'm pretty sure, like, I had back trouble after I left. Like, it was so tense.
Yeah.
Venom does not use the 3D quite too. I think it was one of those 2D to 3D conversions, but there's a lot of action scenes that I think, properly utilize the camera work to make the 3D work for it. But it's not necessary that you see it in 3D.
Okay. So, after Adam delightfully messaged me that he'd seen Venom, I said, you have to see A Star Is Born. And the text was not well received.
More or less, like, I was telling her, I will watch a Star Wars, Star Trek, maybe even like Star Commander, like Star Is Born. Like, I am not telling you that I dislike Judy Garland or Barbra Streisand, but like, I don't celebrate their entire catalog.
Now here's the thing,
and I believe this is the fourth time the movie's been remade.
Okay, first. You had it in 1932 with Neil Hamilton and Constance Bennett.
Then you had, then is the Judy Garland.
No, then you had Janet Gaynor and Frederick March.
So am I skipping a remake in here somewhere?
No, those were the two early ones. I mean, I don't even think I was aware of the Constance Bennett one, and I actually know who she is. But it was called What Price Hollywood, but it's the same story. Then... it's with Frederick March, who was a big deal in the 30s. Then you have what most people think is the first version of A Star Is Born, and that is the one with Judy Garland and James Mason. An aside, Belinda Carlisle married his son. Okay, and that was in 54. So then the first big remake of A Star Is Born
was Christopherson
and Streisand. Yeah. So that was... basically 30 years later, 1976. So we are more than 30 years out from that. So having seen, you know, I don't think I've ever actually seen the entire...
I'm not going to lie to you. I have never seen, besides the most recent, A Star Is Born.
I have seen large parts of them. But I don't think I've ever watched the entire thing. Just because I love movies, I am aware of the story. The one with Judy Garland was, a lot of people thought it was her story because Judy Garland was Frances Gum and she became Judy Garland, but it was not her story. But this was the story of a young actress who is mentored by an older famous actor who is in decline and has a drinking problem, and they get married, but she is a star, and he recognizes that, and she becomes a greater star than he ever was. So there's a picture of Judy Garland with not quite jazz hands, but jazz hands around her face. That's from A Star Is Born. And then, so you're talking your classic 40s and 50s type of big shiny vibe.
And honestly, that is probably the film people would remember her for had she not done The Wizard of Oz.
Correct. Very much so.
The only reason that thing gets overshadowed is because...
of Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
But A Star Is Born was a huge, huge hit for her then. And then there was... And I didn't see it then because I'm not that old. But I do remember when Barbra Streisand... and Kris Kristofferson remade A Star Is Born because it was very, very 70s. And it was all like, what? Why? Judy Garland? Barbra Streisand? And then it was a lot of Barbra Streisand profile stuff. And people kept talking about her nose, which she's heard before. And it was all very 70s, drinky, druggy type of thing. And a whole different vibe. I think Fringe was involved. I'm pretty sure Fringe was involved. And... that's where the song Evergreen came from, which I think is a stunning song that Barbra Streisand sings. And so then it has sat there. Again, she became this great singer, and Kris Kristofferson, who legitimately is singer in quotes, but a fantastic songwriter and actor. And so it's basically the same story. An older guy in decline... and meets a younger woman.
Picks someone out of obscurity.
Who he spots as having talent and who he genuinely cares for because of his own demons, issues, yada, yada, yada. So now, the big thing is, it's the screen debut for Lady Gaga. And Rocket put it all together.
Of anybody, yeah. I guess going into it, that was one of my hang... A, I can't say that I'm not a fan of the original because I've never seen it. Right. I have honestly never seen any of them.
But each time they have completely redone it, as I can see.
Yeah.
You'd have to.
I wasn't a huge fan of, you know, Garland's. I wasn't a huge fan of Streisand's. I don't have anything against them, but like the
he is a huge fan of Frederick March. He's just not willing to admit
I mean, but who isn't?
Yeah,
who isn't? Going into it, like Bradley Cooper, I know from Rocket Raccoon, the Hangover movies. I like Bradley Cooper. This did not seem like a film that was tailored to his talents.
And he directed it.
Also,
this is
his debut film that he has helped write. Is it
and sings?
Yes, he. If not, he is doing some exceptional lip syncing.
Yeah, I think he does.
But I believe that is him. Is it Eli? I believe it's Eric Roth. Also co-wrote it with him. Did Forrest Gump? He's won a couple Oscars.
And this is country. Ish country.
Country by way of like maybe like Lynyrd Skynyrd or the Eagles.
Okay, so more Southern rock country.
That's the way it struck me. Like, or very, very classic rock. It's not country in the way that, like, don't think like steel guitars, George Strait, or like anything, any 2018 country. Like, it's very rock infused, like with a hint of country in it.
Okay.
But like that's his character. He discovers Lady Gaga in a of all places. A cross-dressing bar. She is friends with the girls there, and well, men there.
And
but
he's there because
he has issues with alcohol, and he is out of it in his car. And he tells his driver to pull over, and he's like, "Here, what's this?" And he goes, "Well, I don't know if that's your kind of place." He goes, "Does it have alcohol in it?" And he goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "Well, that's my kind of place."
Okay.
Ends up going in there, and she is performing.
So like, is he a functioning alcoholic? Is that it? Or just he has, at this point, developing it?
At this point, it is not debilitating, but like it hangs on the fringe of functioning. Like you're starting to use functioning very, very lightly there.
Mm-hmm.
But he discovers her. The two of them strike up a relationship. He discovers that she can sing, can also songwrite. Like the two of them begin a relationship. He starts developing that talent. Like she goes on a couple of tour dates with him, gets to perform with him on stage. Like, and people are like, they're connecting this through YouTube. They're like, "Oh, did you see this?" Like eventually, like she gets her own record deal. Like,
and so from what I hear, and I think it's in the trailer, the moment when he brings her on stage by surprise to sing this song and
tells
she
her to come to the concert. Yes.
Yes.
That's
everybody's
when
talking about that.
Yeah, and that's, like I said, in this particular one, it's YouTube that does it. Like, she just blows up, and eventually the right people see it. Like, I guess the thing that makes this such a popular story to retell is it's almost Shakespearean in its simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
Romeo and Juliet can work in medieval times. It can work in the 90s. Like, you can really take those very simple presets in and plug them into wherever you want to make it work. Like, and it's a very simple, like, story that, again, like, every 20 or 30 years, you can do a unique spin on it.
So, because there are so many versions of this, I'm not even going to say this is a spoiler, but I'm just going to assume, like the others, it's not a happy ending type of movie, necessarily,
for
both parties.
The film ends on a down note.
So that, to me, says Oscar.
I will tell you this. I went into this film
kicking and screaming.
I don't know if that's the... I was not enthusiastic.
Did your spouse enjoy it?
She did not go, like...
Really?
She does not watch girly girl movies.
That's
like,
not a girly
she
girl
is
movie.
Not, she doesn't watch romantic comedies. Like, when I mentioned, like, that I was going to, have to go see the new Halloween, she got excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
When she saw the movie Hellfest was coming out, she got excited about that. Like, she does not pick the traditional films that you would... clichéd assume that a woman would want
which
to
is
see
why
with
I
you.
Enjoy her. But when I hear the word Bradley followed by the word Cooper, I'm there. And it's just like, what? He's reading the phone book? Color me in.
I will say, that, again, I did not go into this film
joyously.
Agreeably.
Mm-hmm.
It was a genuinely entertaining film. There were a lot of nuanced performances. It's a very slow burn. Like, if you're expecting just a mile a minute, like, it isn't that. The performances, like, even from a newcomer, like, I feel stupid calling her Lady Gaga because I don't think that's what her parents named her.
No.
But because I don't know what her real name is. Even
isn't
she.
It Stephanie?
Now, she is not. She ain't stepping outside her wheelhouse here. Like, mm-hmm. Lady Gaga playing a person that had suddenly, like, has a singing career
hoisted. It is Stephanie.
Hoisted on them and can dance. I don't think that's a stretch for her.
Right.
That was like in 8 Mile.
I don't think
Eminem was pushing himself there being like a white rapper from the wrong side of the tracks. I think I know how he got in that headspace.
By the way, 8 Mile, pretty good movie.
Well, again, he's not really pushing his limits there. It would be like Steven Spielberg coming to me and being like, "Adam, I have this film about a white nerd that loves Star Trek." He has diabetes and he really likes sandwiches and air conditioning. And I'm like, I will Daniel Day-Lewis this. I got it, Steven. Like, that's literally the headspace that I live in. Like,
yeah.
She is not going outside of her comfort zone, but she does it admirably. Like,
but stylistically, she is not wearing a meat suit. Gaga.
No, she's not playing Lady Gaga, but I'm just saying, like, she's playing a singer. I think I understand. I got it. Now, Bradley Cooper, like, is very un-Rocket and very un-Hangover in this movie. Like, he likes to play, like, slick-talking jerks.
I love slick-talking jerks.
He is not a slick-talking jerk in this movie.
Oh.
Dude's, like, he is straight-up acting, and, like... Mm. It is probably one of the stronger performances in the movie. Andrew Dice Clay is even in this movie. And I didn't realize it until the end of the movie because I was like, where do I know him?
Bada-bing!
Dice Man! That Dice,
Dice
yes.
jokes are rising to my lips. So what is he in this?
He is Lady Gaga's father. Her character within mm-hmm. it, she is Allie's father.
Does he wear a wife beater?
No, he actually is wearing a very Sinatra-esque get-up during a lot of the movie.
Bob and Neil. Never mind.
As we said before, Bradley Cooper directed it, and I'm telling you, like, it was a very deft touch that he directed this with. Like, the pacing in it, like... Honestly, there's not a lot about this movie I didn't think was right.
And musically, pretty good.
Yeah, I'd buy the soundtrack, mm-hmm. like, to it. Like, it was not, like, I guess, coin... Like, I never got irritated with the music, or it was just like, there's no way this would ever be popular music. Like,
mm-hmm.
if you see, like, a movie about music, and they're just like, oh, and it became a number one hit! Like, and you're sitting there going, that song is awful. There's... No way that becomes a popular song anywhere. Believably, these are songs that people would enjoy hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there's a lot of music in this film for obvious reasons. The music's good. Like I said, the direction is solid. The acting, like, is appropriate. Like, the script is pretty tight. Like, it may not be everybody's cup of tea, but it's a well-made film. If you are a Star Is Born enthusiast, you should check this version out.
And if you feel you're being dragged to a horrible movie because your stereotypical girlfriend wants to see it, it is not a horrible movie.
No. I mean, honestly, like, if you like a solid, entertaining, if depressing, film, honestly, like, there's a lot worse, like, that you could do.
Please tell me you went in at, like, 10 o'clock Sunday morning.
The Star Is Born for one.
Yeah, get that.
Were you the only one there?
That was the other one. I wanted Chris there as the buffer to just be like, so I could, like, you know, like,
she's making me
give that face like, I better pick the movie.
Star Is Born for one.
But, like, if it's just me, like, then they're just like, isn't this the weirdo that was watching Crazy Rich Asians? What is wrong with this guy? Like, no, nobody batted an eye when I saw Venom, but like they're just like, oh yeah, this is the Sunday guy. I hope Julia Roberts doesn't come out with a new movie. He'll probably want to see that.
I'm waiting for Secret of the Traveling Pants 2.
Bet this guy's got the Blu-ray back at the house.
Oh, yeah. That's hilarious.
Bet this guy religiously watches My Best Friend's Wedding. Like, it just. But, I mean, like I said, in the case of Crazy Rich Asians, like, it was actually a solidly made film. A Star is Born, like, when I got home, and she was like, well, how was it? I was like, listen, don't stop me. It's actually a really good movie.
Then you should have seen it.
I don't know what else to tell you. Like, it's a little depressing, like, especially towards the end. But, like, the love story is believable. Like, the film just works. If this is any kind of premonition of what Bradley Cooper is capable of as a director in the future, like, I don't know if this is just a one-off for him, if he does it. Like, Eddie Murphy directed one movie. As far as I know, he's never directed another one.
Bradley, wasn't that Norbert?
It was Harlem Nights.
Oh.
If Bradley Cooper decides that he wants to direct again, as long as this is not just like an oddity and that it was just not, yeah, this happened to be the one that he got right. If this is any kind of indication, if acting ever slows down for him, he has a second career as a director.
Mm-hmm. He's Clint Eastwooding.
Man, speaking of which, Clint Eastwood's new movie also like was they showed the preview for it.
What is his new movie?
The Mule.
Oh, that's right.
Holy. Does this guy know how to make a bad movie? Like,
he doesn't.
It just, I'm watching
I even like the orangutan one.
It is, I found the trailer gripping for his movie, and I'm just like, I mean, how many films that tie you, just reel you in like that is one person allowed to have? Like, Unforgiven. If Unforgiven's the only movie that he ever did, fine. Wait, he'd be gold. But he didn't. He also did that. He did Million Dollar Baby. Like, he just keeps getting it right. Like, what was it? Mystic River? Like, this guy just knows how to craft a film.
Okay.
And he's no slouch as an actor either.
Oh, no, not at all. And here's the thing. He's 88 years old, and I still get excited about, Clint Eastwood movie. Got to see that.
Like, I mean, whatever portal you like to use, YouTube, iTunes, whatever, go check out the preview for The Mule and tell me that this film does not look like something you want to see.
I don't know why it's leaving me right now, probably because I just got back from vacation, my first in 4 years. El Dorado? No, El Dorado. What was the car one? Gran Torino.
Gran Torino,
El Dorado, Gran Torino. Also, what a good movie.
Also, and the thing is, he also directs all these.
Yeah.
Like, Unforgiven, he directed. Million Dollar Baby, he directed. Mystic River, he directed. The Mule, also directed.
Pale Rider, he didn't direct. So cool.
Like, Eastwood, like, or, I mean, if you go back as far as the Dirty Harry movies, like, he doesn't direct, I think, the first two, but it's like the third
or
fourth
day.
One. He even directed some of those. If you haven't watched the first, just, you don't have to watch all of them.
Just watch Dirty Harry.
Watch Dirty Harry, maybe Magnum Force. Like, you know, whatever. Just
watch
all
the
of
Deadpool.
Them. Just watch
too.
All of them. But the first Dirty Harry is quintessential.
And exceptionally good.
I did learn that apparently he was offered Dick Tracy back
really?
In the day. Yeah.
When, what's
the
his
one
face
that Warren
did
Beatty? Yeah. Like, he was in the one that was initially, like, tied to it. Also, Bruce Campbell was going to do a TV series. And I'll tell you know who has a square jaw just like Dick Tracy? Basically
Bruce
looks,
Campbell.
Yeah.
Isn't that the name of his book, My Square
Leading,
Jaw?
No, it's not Leading with My Chin. That's Jay Leno's.
It's a chin thing. It's a very entertaining book.
But the reason why Campbell never got to do his Dick Tracy TV show, Warren Beatty owns the rights to Dick Tracy, and he just didn't want any part of it. Now, granted, he hasn't done anything with Dick Tracy since 1990.
Huh.
But he blocked the TV series, and I'm like,
why?
You own that IP. You are going to have a TV show. Literally, you don't have to do anything, and the money just comes to you. Why did you not do that?
Mm.
This would have piggybacked on the
We talk into our watches now all the time.
Yeah. But I, for whatever reason, Clint, like, that really got me going. And guess who was attached at one point, like, to direct it? Martin Scorsese.
What?
Do you not want to see Martin Scorsese's Clint Eastwood starring Dick Tracy?
Yes, I do.
Like, I want to watch that now.
Is it called Raging Tracy?
Probably.
Yeah.
There's, well, Scorsese ends up doing Goodfellas instead.
Whatever.
Like,
but, still.
But I'm just saying, like, is that not a movie that you were interested in seeing?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just putting it out there.
All right. So, A Star is Born, go see.
Yeah. Honestly, like, Venom, if you're a fan of superhero films, it is not a home run out and out. But honestly, there's enough there that you're going to like it. Star is Born is just a good movie. It normally, like, I we don't get, like, the back-to-back ones, like, that are worth it. But honestly, this was a good weekend for movies. Like, if your girlfriend is into kind of, like, the tearjerkers, it's something you can sit through, like, as a boyfriend and not be demasculated or asleep. And maybe after you've taken her to see A Star is Born, she'll let you go see Venom with her.
And are you planning, I know you're going to see Halloween, are you planning on Smallfoot? Well, I guess you have to. You have like 1,000 children.
Probably. Probably it's a yes, probably.
Yeah. And I'm trying to figure out what's coming up next.
I know Halloween is, I really want to think there's another like slasher-esque movie.
Have you seen the Clock in the Wall Jack Black thing yet?
I have not.
I assume that's still out.
I would assume. The poster was up.
Okay.
Like, I did not ask them personally, but it the poster for it under the now playing. So unless they're just messing with people, which would be funny, I would respect that.
Yeah.
It should be.
I certainly would enjoy that immensely. Oh, I move my apps around so much.
You know how you can stop that?
Oh, like I delete them and then re-add them.
Oh, okay. All right. Well.
That's what I mean. So that's... Oh, and what was the last search? It was about Jack the Ripper. I got to get rid of that. It's fascinating, the things that we come up with. What movies are coming out? Oh, and that's the same screen I don't want. I'm done. Anyway, so two good films.
Yeah, and that were both released this weekend.
And like, because of the downer side to it, and I predict an Oscar because we all know Oscar loves if the actor gains weight or loses weight, has something wrong with them intrinsically, it has some sort of addiction and or dies, or a combination of all of them.
The only thing that I see going against this for like Oscar consideration is the fact it's not just a remake. It's a film that has been remade, what did we say, five? Was this the fifth?
Yeah.
They like originality usually. Like, occasionally you get that misnomer, like when De Niro gets nominated for playing the same role that Brando got nominated for.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally you run into that stuff, but I think the fact that it is a five times remade film will probably disqualify it in a lot of Oscar nomination hopefulness.
Really? I don't know about that.
I mean, I could be wrong. But if this is, like I said, if this is any kind of indication of Bradley Cooper's work, he will probably eventually earn himself at least a nomination.
Mm-hmm.
If Warren Beatty, Kevin Costner, if there's any slew of actors, turn director, Robert Redford, that can all go into that, Cooper's got the chops.
Oh, okay. I knew there was a song attached to it, and with Judy Garland. It was The Man That Got Away, which is an amazing song, which I will not sing for you now. It was nominated for many, many awards. It won Golden Globes for Judy Garland and James Mason, nominated for Oscars, but they did not win. So that was the Judy Garland version.
I'm just like, that story has been lauded multiple times, like
for good
in
reason.
The box office. And it sounds like it's also been Oscar. I'm not discounting it completely, but I'm just saying I think the fact that it is redundant in that sense may go against it.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll find out when you and I are sent our... Oh, that's right. We don't get to vote.
Yeah, we don't vote on the Oscars anymore.
Those were the days, Adam. They really were.
Those were the days,
my friend. Okay, that's it. Parental guidance suggested. Venom and A Star is Born. Win-win. We'll talk to you next week. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.